Counselor Accents Podcast. Two school counselors who love their jobs. Oh, and they happen to have Southern accents too. Bless their hearts.
I'm Laura Rancourt.
And I am Kim Crumley. And together we are Counselor Accents.
And Kim, and you know that we have several soapboxes that we get up on frequently.
I'm on it right now.
I am pushing you off because I want to stand on it for a little bit. Trauma-informed care is one of those soapboxes. We're very passionate about schools understanding trauma. But you know, when we do our trauma presentation, our very last, and I would dare say our most important slide is where we talk about the physician heal thyself, and we talk about taking care of ourselves before we can take care of others. And guess what, Kim?
We're going to have some experts talking
about.
We
do have some experts with us today. So ladies, why don't you introduce yourself and we'll go from there.
Wonderful. It's so lovely to be here. Thank you so much for having us. So I'm Megan Marcus. I'm the founder of FuelEd, and with us we have Dr. Kelly Munger, who leads up our research and development at FuelEd. So my professional background, I always wanted to be a therapist. So I was really drawn to people and people development. My own inner world and others' inner worlds were always really fascinating to me. And I loved building relationships. So I thought, you know, clinical psychology would be my route, but all of that changed when I had a really amazing opportunity to work with a professor on his book called The Social Neuroscience of Education. So essentially, this book explores the science behind why relationships drive learning and how the best teachers, the best schools, the best districts, really their secret and at their core are simply the best at building relationships. And I thought, wow, what power and potential there is in the teacher-student relationship, in really all relationships in the school ecosystem. And even more incredible is when I looked into the science of how those relationships not only drive academic learning, social emotional learning, but can heal trauma for many students who are coming from toxic stress backgrounds, have had experienced adverse childhood experiences. And what an amazing opportunity for schools to be almost this delivery system for secure relationships. But then when I looked into teacher preparation, I was really surprised to find that despite the importance of relationships to an educator's job, it's not something they're taught in their day-to-day work. And so you have like school counselors, for example, on campus with that skill set. And so much of the weight falls on them because we haven't yet equipped educators with the, you know, interpersonal skills, with the emotional well-being, with the self-awareness that comes with building secure relationships. So that's where I came onto the idea of FuelEd. I said, why can't we just adapt or translate some of the best practices and professional development that you usually would see being given to counselors and therapists for the use by teachers? And so that's why FuelEd's mission is to develop emotionally intelligent educators who build relationship-driven schools. And we've been working in the field since 2012. So that's a little bit about me and FuelEd, and I'll let Kelly introduce herself and how she came on board as well.
Sure. Thanks, Meg. Well, I'm Kelly Munger, and I have sort of a reverse story from Meg. I started in the classroom, actually started when I was 22 years old, teaching university students in China, of all places, and was kind of thrown into the deep end of building relationships in the classroom and of course, across cultures. And even, of course, a language barrier. So that's kind of how I began my career. And from there, I moved into the special education classroom. And really kind of, I guess I had the same thought as Meg, as sort of that phrase of why can't we just, and started to see how so many of my students had really huge gaps in having secure attachment available to them, right? And so I was in a classroom where there were kids who really had no secure attachment figure and began to wonder kind of, oh, wow, I almost felt my own lack. I can't do this job. I'm not prepared for this. I don't have the skills I need. So of course, what did I do? I got a master's in counseling psychology, became a licensed therapist, and started to work with children and their families in the therapy room. Of course, then kind of did another turn where I realized, if we could integrate these skills into the lives of teachers and into the way schools work every single day, then I think we would see more healing, more truly trauma-sensitive spaces forming in all of our schools, which are already there, up and running, and already playing this huge role in the lives of children. So then I got a PhD in special education, and I met Megan, and the rest is history.
Okay, we're 5 minutes in.
I know, right? And
I'm inspired. I'm inspired, and I'm in love.
Everything that is coming forth from your mouths is inspiring, and I want to know more, so I'm excited to get started. And this just makes sense. Coming from a teacher background, if teachers understood, and I know you guys are probably going to address this, how this just makes sense if you are trying to impart knowledge academically. We always say, work smarter, not harder. And if you could just get teachers to understand, this is going to help behavior. Speak to those things. Like, this just makes sense for teachers. Expand on that a little bit.
Sure. So, you know, I think that we often focus, like you said, on behavior, on the moment in front of us. And we forget, or we haven't ever learned, that secure attachment is actually this sort of foundational hub from which children or students can flourish, right? If we have a home base that's safe, that's secure, that's when we begin to see children taking risk, taking on challenges, whether, you know, academically obviously is important here, but also socially and emotionally. I often tell this story about when I was in an early childhood classroom where there was a high 100% rate of traumatic exposure for these kiddos. And when they would first come into our classroom, they were wallflowers. They were stuck to the wall, and they would stay on the peripheral so that they could really stay on guard and keep an eye on everything that was happening. They were very hypervigilant children. But then as they began to trust our staff, the educators who were there to really be that safe, secure attachment figure, those students would naturally begin to like melt or unlock or unfreeze. And you would see them, their motor movement, because they were young children, would literally increase, right? The classroom would get busier in a positive way as the children felt safer. And so focusing and really investing our energy as educators on being that safe, secure kind of rock in the classroom actually has all these cascading impacts that make our job in the long run easier. Because we have a student who can trust us, can come back to us, can actually have their cup filled by us. Without that relationship, there's a sense of futility, powerlessness, frustration, and even reactivity, right? Which is a vicious cycle because that erodes trust between the teacher and the student, which makes the behavior even worse. And then here we go. What would you add to that, Meg?
I just think that's such a great example of how that investment is the most powerful and most like almost efficient, as you said, like the work smarter, not harder, Kim. But I think teachers are up against, it's a bit of an uphill battle for teachers because most oftentimes it's not prioritized. It's not necessarily the frame through which, you know, administrators, teacher preparation, teacher professional development brings a teacher their job. There's always like, make a difference and build relationship, but what does that really mean? What does what's the neurobiology behind what happens when a teacher is able to create a space of warmth and a space of safety? And how does that feed into all the other goals and needs and pressures that are put onto teachers? But it becomes kind of like lip service, like build relationships and get to know your kids, instead of really the very focal point of what really teaching and learning can and should be because of all the other demands placed on educators.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, I can hear teachers, they're getting ready for standardized tests and they're, you know, all of these academic demands that they have. And, you know, Laura and I have said, it's going to take one rope holder to
pull them up, it's going to take somebody to make that difference in their lives. Do you guys see an increase in teachers more aware of kind of this SEL realm? Do you think it's improving?
Oh, that's a juicy question, Kim. I think that we, as a field with very good intentions, have gone really hard in the last few years on student-facing SEL. I think the focus has been on how do we teach the skills of SEL to students. And there's almost this, what I observe, almost a magical thinking of if we give teachers an SEL curriculum, then students will be able to internalize that and development, their social and emotional development will all of a sudden take off. And I think that's a deep misunderstanding. We laugh about this because I keep my handbook of attachment always handy right here. Right? It's a very, that doesn't take into account the decades of research, which demonstrate very clearly that secure attachment is transmitted generationally. And I think we can see that in the classroom. There's a generational aspect, right? Of course, a teacher is not the parent of a student, but there is sort of a parallel relationship there that we can make. And really, if we want students to develop those skills that we want to see in them, like resilience and empathy and the ability to, you know, set boundaries and advocate for oneself, we will not see that through a curriculum. We might see it. I shouldn't say that. We will definitely see some improvement, I think, through a curriculum. But I think the efficient, powerful, loving way to approach student SEL is teacher SEL. And we see an uptick in that, I think, Megan. I mean, Megan, I feel like we would say there's more attention, especially after the pandemic. Or all of a sudden we're looking at a teacher workforce that is completely wrung out. I did a survey recently with a lot of teachers, and I asked them, give me three words to describe you at the end of this year. And of course, this is not shocking, but the number one answer was exhausted. The number two was tired. I think number three were like frustrated and overwhelmed. and there was very little positivity. In terms of a self-concept as a teacher. And so how can we, if we aren't working on helping teachers feel secure and have the skills of secure attachment, then I think we're focusing on the wrong thing.
Laura, I have to give a Southernism here. Putting the cart before the horse. I think a lot of times we are saying, teachers, here's some more. Here's some SEL curriculum. We need you to do this. And we've been guilty of that as school, as it comes down to us as school counselors. Get this SEL curriculum out there, and we're not addressing the self-care of the teacher. We're not addressing the that attachment piece, which is, I agree, and I think this is what you guys are advocating for. Get that relationship built, and then that other is going to make more sense.
Absolutely. It's like making bread without the yeast. It's like, yeah.
Thank you for adding that's another Southernism right there. She's in Atlanta, so that's allowed right there. So let's not just put a Band-Aid on this. Let's really look at what's going to make a difference.
I think to take it even further, it's like in order to for teachers to develop students socially and emotionally, they need to be able to build relationships with students. That's what, you know, the point Kelly made. But in order for teachers to be able to build secure relationships with students, they need to have an experience of secure relationships themselves. And so often teachers don't have that on their school campus, right? It might feel like some toxicity in the adult culture. They might not have a supportive relationship with their administrator. They might not have someone they can go to process their own trauma even outside of the school, you know, their own therapist or their own, you know, mentor. And so that's the piece to the intergenerational attachment, is in order to, you can't give what you don't have, right? And if teachers don't have models for secure attachment, they can't be models for secure attachment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's pretty profound. Laura, we've often talked about the culture for the teachers, how important the culture is for the teachers. And we hear so many teachers, and we have talked about this, Laura, who feel underappreciated. And I think it's because a lot of times they're not with other adults, and that administration is missing that key piece of, we appreciate you. You are seen. And Laura, you've addressed this as school counselors, what our piece is to go and encourage teachers. Do you want to share a little bit about that, Laura?
Yeah, we've just talked about how, you know, we're kind of governed by the American School Counselor Association. And when we step into the role of school counselors, whether we like it or not, ASCA says that we are leaders. And so sometimes you have to be what you don't have. And if you're in a school where maybe you don't have that supportive administrator or whatever, all the more reason why school counselors should lead the way and provide that encouragement. And just like you guys are saying, that one adult relationship, that one caring adult relationship can negate years of a high ACEs score. So can that encouragement from somebody who recognizes what somebody else is doing. And Kim and I have seen where we've given just a little bit of encouragement, even unintentionally. You know, we weren't setting out to encourage. We just said, hey, this is really fantastic. Totally genuine. We've had people like cry whenever we said things like that. And so I'm taking notes as you guys are talking, and my brain is spinning. And if I weren't attached to so many cords, I would give you guys a standing ovation here at the very beginning of our episode here, just because the things that you're saying make so much sense. And I think that these programs are handed down, you know, these SEL programs, with good intentions to take care of the students. However, we are forgetting that we do need to take care of the teachers. So what do you guys do as Fuel Ed? What are your answers to this?
Great question. So at Fuel Ed, we have a framework where we are really working to expose educators to the science, the skills, and the self-awareness of relationships. Through our flagship program, the whole Educator Collective, we expose educators, we build educators' knowledge base around trauma, around attachment, around the impact of both trauma and attachment on the brain. And that's really eye-opening for educators. All of a sudden, you have a new frame through which to look at the world, understand your students' behaviors, your own behaviors, your colleagues' behaviors. The second component is the skills to build secure relationships. Two foundational skills for building secure relationships are empathic communication, or empathic listening, mirroring, as you know, we call it more in the counseling or therapy world, where someone comes to you, you know, they might be filled with emotion, and instead of trying to cheer them up, give them a pep talk, fix it, you can sit with them and be a holding space for that feeling, helping them feel seen and known and accepted exactly where they are in their feelings. It's a really hard thing to do. It's really counter to our culture. You watch TV, and once you learn this, you see it's like empathy blockers everywhere. But it's a skill that can be learned through practice, and it's incredibly powerful in terms of healing and relationship building. Another core skill that we teach is genuineness. How can a teacher not only, I'll say educator, because we expose our work to principals and school counselors and teachers and district leaders, but how can an educator not only tune into another person's inner world and be there for them, but how can they tune into their own inner world and express in a direct and honest way what's going on for them as well? Because it's that two-way communication where I can be real with you and you can be real with me, and we'll both see one another, foundational to secure attachment. And so much of what an educator's taught goes against these ideas. For example, you know, you want to be the cheerleader, that's really not empathy. Or don't smile until Christmas, that's really not genuineness. And so it's really fighting some of the kind of cultural norms that are in the teaching profession by even doing capacity building around these things. And then finally, the last area is self-awareness. Research shows that the number one determinant of whether or not you will build a secure relationship with a child or adult in your life is actually your own attachment history. Did you have secure early childhood relationships? If you didn't, and you haven't processed and healed from that, you're simply more likely to build insecure relationships with others. The good news is that we can actually change that through processing, unpacking our trauma, through experiencing subsequent secure relationships. And so that's what we try to do with educators, because, you know, most adults out there don't necessarily have a secure relationships in their childhood. And there's some studies that show an even higher percentage in the teaching population come in with insecure attachments. And so it's really important, just like therapists are asked to unpack their stuff, do their own healing, so that they can be healthy enough channels to do this, to do the work of therapeutic work. We feel very strongly that educators similarly need to unpack their own trauma, understand their attachment, their triggers, and how they play out in the classroom. So our curriculum is scaffolded to help educators go on that inner journey. And then after this kind of flagship program, we work to help schools build into their own settings, healing spaces to continue the work. And also we see a subset of our educators going on to be activated as change makers on the ground. So there's several stories of educators who, once they've kind of seen this new light, they start behaving differently. They're becoming a relationship-driven educator. Now they want to impact their system. And so they'll go on to, you know, create new schools with this frame, change behavior management systems in their schools with this frame, and become kind of advocates on the ground for field-level changes and system-level changes. So that's a little bit of a high level of the content of our work and some of the impacts we've seen.
As you were talking, I was thinking, and then you kind of said something similar towards the end, but I was thinking, it's like you are giving them a crash course in school counseling school. Like when mm-hmm. we get our degree, it's mm-hmm. like you're taking them through a crash course to get their counseling degree. And how powerful and life-changing must this be, not only for the educator, but also for the students, because it does trickle down. And, you know, they're ultimately the benefactors of this.
And we help make school counselors' jobs easier, too, because the school counselors are getting referrals right and left with teachers who aren't necessarily, they feel, you know, out of their element to handle issues that have become escalated. Well, now teachers know how to listen in a deeper way, mm-hmm. know how to understand students' histories in a different way. They can relate in a way that manages the behavior through relationships. So the school counselor is getting less and less referrals, and they can actually go deeper in their work, whether that's one-on-one with students or more system-wide programs that they're implementing, because they're less drowning in referrals from teachers, because teachers' capacity to be, you know, relational is transformed.
This is huge.
Absolutely, because it's overwhelming. It's becoming more overwhelming. We say you can't, those students who used to be the outliers that mm-hmm. we would deal with, that this, it has flip-flopped. And so we have to depend on teachers. It's not, it's basically, it's come to, we have to depend more on teachers, but are they ready to do this job? Go ahead, Laura. And then I want to talk about how many schools are doing this. Go ahead.
I want to go back to something you said, Kelly. It's one of the first things you said, and I made a note of it because I loved the way that you phrased it so much. And Megan, it ties into how you started your last section. But Kelly, you said something about teachers focus on the moment in front of them. Mm-hmm. And I think that is where it's like we can have all these ideas on how to handle these behaviors, and we can be trauma-informed until we have that moment in front of us where we've got 20 kids and we have the one that's having the moment. So, and then Megan, you were talking about getting teachers to understand that, and I'm going to paraphrase here, but kind of that it's not personal. It's not a personal attack against the teacher, but it's what is going on inside of them. So talk to me about what that moment is like whenever you teach educators about, I guess, what's going on inside of them.
Oh, it's such a good question. So this is kind of how we see it happening. we kind of start in our flagship training, we kind of start pretty big picture and broad, right? And we almost focus on students, and the idea of attachment is really mapped onto students. Mm-hmm. But as we kind of get a little bit more comfortable and kind of safe in the training, we've gotten to know our table mates a little more, or our Zoom mates, we actually turn back around and say, oh, wait, but you were a child once. And we actually walk teachers through the attachment story of an imaginary teacher. And we show that sort of longitudinal arc of how, even though you're in this moment with this reactive child, the past, right, is still present with you. And we then walk teachers through their own arc. And we actually, at the end of the training, we sit in circles and we give teachers the option. We certainly would never force them to do this, but we give them the option to share their attachment stories with one another and to receive empathy without blocking, without anyone trying to dismiss or fix or cheer up.
Wow.
And that experience, what teachers tell us is that the opportunity to do just that, right, gives them a new lens, not only for their students, but for themselves. Mm. And so when you get to that reactive moment, there's this new layer of awareness, almost that metacognition that we talk about constantly in education. The ability to zoom out and realize, oh, wow, my story's here and your story's here. And that is what this moment's about. Wow. My attachment story is here with your attachment story. This isn't just me having a bad day and you being a jerk. And so with that awareness, that creates a space for pause, for empathy, for a breath. And to be able to see with that new lens actually helps you to co-regulate with a student, because like you said, it's not this personal reactive, I'm lost and flooded in the moment situation anymore. And that is so empowering.
My mind goes to all the conversations that I've had in the past with people who have said, if I could just take them home, if I could just, I know how we all feel here. So, but you know, ones that say, if I could just get my hands on them, if I could just discipline them myself. And I'm like, you know, it's not that, and that might've worked with your own kids, but they had that secure foundation of love and, you know, those things that you provided at home. And some of these kids, in fact, I would say the majority of the kids that we're getting now do not have that foundation. Mm-hmm. And Kim, I know that's one of your hot buttons too. So
I think in our hearts as educators, we want to, and we do see the teachers who say, when they find out the students in this had this traumatic experience, and we'll hear them say, oh, if I could just take them home. But what we want to say often is, you had them every day. And and often we're the very one who is not making that connection, or not, you know, you want to discipline them the old way that's actually just triggering them.
Right.
So I think it's not that it's lack of feeling or emotion, right, or caring. It's just, what do I do? And I love what you're saying. Is very empowering, because it's not asking the teachers to fix anything.
Exactly.
And I think what's happening for a lot of those teachers who are feeling so exasperated is their own shame is being triggered. You know, they feel insecure, they feel incompetent, they feel like they are not being successful. And it's the way the system is set up right now, it's a little bit like crazy making, almost gaslighting, because we're not calling a spade a spade, right? We're not saying, like, these students are traumatized, they need relationships to heal, you're their teacher, spending more time with them than even parents can invest in those relationships, and that's the most important thing. So we're throwing a million other demands on the teachers and teaching them about how to be better and, you know, instructionally, and I'm not saying those things aren't important, but it can make you feel, as an educator, I imagine, like, I'm doing all the things I'm being trained and taught to do and nothing's working, what's wrong with me? Or what's wrong with the student, when really it's a whole other paradigm. And I think that's what happens when educators come through our training. It feels like an unburdening, they're like, wow, I finally feel seen. This makes so much sense.
This is one of those aha moments, Laura, we talk about. Aha, yeah. Okay, it's a new way of thinking. So when, generally happens? A school reaches out to you. Walk us through the process of, let's just say there are school counselors and administrators out there listening, and they say, we want to know more. We want in on this. What are your steps?
Yeah, so we work with school counselors and school administrators and district administrators all the time. They find out about our program. They reach out. We have a conversation where we learn more about the needs of the campus or the needs of the district. And then we design a plan to roll out our programming, whether it's our three-day, flagship program that's called the Whole Educator Collective, or we have smaller, shorter programs, such as a one-day empathy school, which really just drills into the skill of empathic listening. And so we might partner with a school to roll out that to all the teachers, to a subset amongst the district, or a group of like leadership across schools, so that they can kind of roll it out from there. And we have also begun in the last year experimenting with some really powerful cultural practices that Fuelad actually incubated within its own culture. And we saw the way in which it grew our staff's emotional intelligence and well-being so dramatically. We said, well, we're crazy if we don't bring this to schools. And so one of those practices is called stewardship. And it's basically a peer support network where educators are paired up and meet weekly in order to give and receive care. We think it's a really scalable and sustainable solution to a lot of the issues we see in adult social-emotional learning, as well as emotional well-being, because everyone can afford that hour a week. And it's a way, once you build the educator skills and then build that network, that you can really, really just create a lot of growth and a lot of safety in a school campus. And so we've been setting some educators up in stewardship relationships, and also hosting for all of our alumni empathy circles, which are really a similar kind of cultural practice that's all around helping educators feel seen and safe.
And we're all about educators being seen and safe, because like we've said, we absolutely believe that over the years we've seen the appreciation of teachers has diminished somewhat. And then I think even within our own houses, our own schools, a teacher can feel forgotten. And so we're all about that. And I really, this does flow into what we say, physician, heal thyself, because until we are ready, and I think you guys are doing a great thing bringing this into the schools. So, is this across the United States? Are you getting schools in just one particular area, or is this open for all schools in the United States?
Across the United States, yeah. We are from West Coast to East Coast now, right, Meg?
Yeah, we're proud to be founded in Houston, Texas. So a lot of our work has taken place there. And that's the community where Fuelad really grew and took off. And now, 9 years into our programming, we work with over 15,000 educators across the U.S.
Wow. Is it ongoing? I know you said the empathy circles are with the alumni, but is there other, do you check in? Is it one and done, or do you try to really stay with the school?
We've been growing our programming in a way where we really want to see that long-term impact, and our multi-year partnerships are the most effective. And now we've actually launched a fellowship where we're experimenting with ways in which to help educators really craft a project that will allow them to make that difference in their own system, like really advocating for a change in the behavioral management system, or maybe it's advocating for a systemic change around educator wellness. And so we ultimately want to see shifts in the field where Fuelad's not even needed anymore, because educator emotional intelligence and interpersonal skills are so foundational and baked in to educator preparation and support. And the way we see us contributing to getting there is not only training educators themselves in these skills, but activating them to go on and really hold this mission with them.
I'm putting you on the spot here. So can you tell me a success story that stands out in your mind over the past years that when you've worked with educators? What stands out in your mind is a huge success story?
Want to share, Kelly?
Meg?
What's that?
You live up. Who were you thinking of? Are you thinking of Destiny?
Yes, why don't you go ahead and share? Kelly spends so much time listening to our educators through all the qualitative research she does. So I'm happy to share, but if you have one on the top of your mind, you can go.
Well, we might circle back to Destiny, but because this is more of like a group success story.
Yeah.
Beginning is really important. But I look at the data, right? And one thing that's really interesting is that we've worked with a very high, again, 100% rate of trauma exposure in the student population. I would argue in the teacher population as well, certainly secondary trauma. And this is a system that really doubled down and said, anyone who wants this training, we're going to provide it. And down to, if you drive a bus here and you want to come, like you have such an opportunity to impact students. You need to know how to impact the mirror. And so I spent a lot of time with those teachers and in sort of the wake of going through Fuel Ed as like a school. And the thing that to me, we haven't really talked a ton about even at Fuel Ed Med, but what was amazing to me is that after going through the whole educator collective, not only was I hearing over and over again from these teachers that I'm seeing my students through a new lens, I'm seeing my students through a new lens. What we also saw was an incredible explosion in self-care, really meaningful self-care. So sleep and therapy. I think it was 1 in 3 teachers were going to therapy on their own, individually.
Wow.
After the whole educator collective, because we really pushed that in the training. We really lay out the foundation for why therapy. And so I was hearing just this cascading impact of, I'm sleeping more. I'll never forget this one teacher. He just said, I'm sleeping now. And I think about how that's so foundational. And in a way, it's a little bit of a sad story. We say this at Fuel Ed sometimes we give teachers permission to do things like sleep, go to therapy, have safe relationships, right? That sort of is so foundational. And yet it's not at all a given in the life of an educator at all. And so, you know, I can also report that school had really, really amazing gains across all areas of school functioning.
In That's those amazing. Teachers.
And they had a lot of, you know, they were a turnaround school, so they had a lot of intervention happening. But there's no doubt that Fuel Ed was a part of that, and especially a part of retaining their teachers, right? Because when you're in a school that says, hey, I don't want to just give you something else to do. I want to support you in being someone who is healthy and whole. That is the kind of school you want to stay at forever.
Mm-hmm.
I just love, I think about that whole group and I think, oh, those teachers are sleeping.
Yeah. That's huge. That's huge. And it says so much. You know, it does. So, any more?
Meg, you want to share about Destiny?
Sure. I'm happy to share Destiny's story. It's more of an individual story than the whole system approach, but it is a pretty special story. So Destiny is a Fuel Ed alumni who is very near and dear to our hearts. So Destiny became a teacher so that she could inspire and support students facing adversity. You know, a lot of the students that we've been talking about. And so as a teacher, she would always use the tool that teachers use to handle student behavior, right? So if a student would act out, she'd call them out. Student picks a fight, write them up. Student throws a chair, she'd suspend them or send them to the school counselor's office. Let's just say a lot of her students were getting suspended. So let's take a moment now to rewind to Destiny's early life. Destiny grew up poor and homeless with a mother who was a drug addict and a father who was incarcerated. When Destiny was 12, her mom lost her rights to her kids, and Destiny was put up for adoption. That very same year, Destiny's mother died from an overdose of cocaine, and 6 months later, her stepfather was murdered. All of this happening kind of behind the scenes in her life as she's, you know, an average kid in the classroom. And so like many of her students in her school, when she was growing up, her brother was also constantly suspended. He'd throw chairs, curse out teachers, and it was really the only way he knew how to deal with all that pain. Suspended enough times, he got expelled, and once expelled, we all know, the kids are just statistically more likely to drop out, and once they drop out, they're 8 times more likely to go to prison. Destiny's brother has now been in and out of jail for the last 14 years with young kids at home, 3 young kids at home, who are now experiencing the very same trauma that Destiny and her brother experienced as children. And so it was really only when Destiny went through FULED that all of this hit her. She hadn't processed or made sense of that. She became a teacher to change lives, but the way she'd been relating to students was more likely to ensure their lives stayed exactly the same. That was a huge wake-up call for Destiny. From there on out, she completely changed her approach to students and started to see students' challenging behaviors as an invitation for her to consider, what's the student going through? What are they needing? That new lens. Let's figure out what's triggering the student, and if I'm this upset, what's triggering me? So throughout the year, Destiny used FULED's counseling services, because for many years we actually provided counseling to educators directly, to explore her story, her triggers, her trauma for the first time in her adult life. She started to heal and grow this new reflective capacity. Whenever her buttons were pushed, she noticed that burning sensation. Instead of reacting, she paused and she could ask herself, what's going on with me? She could really begin to step away, take care of herself, and then more deeply listen to others, be there for them in a way she'd never been there before. And so she started doing this not only with her students, but the adults in her school too. And people really took a notice to this. Before, her colleagues really looked at her as pretty reactive, kind of a hot-headed, emotional, defensive type. But with her new skills, she began to assume the best in others, take others' perspective. She grew more open, more honest, more vulnerable, more receptive to feedback. So what we see here is, like, really through her experience with FULED, Destiny grew not as an educator, but as a person. And as a result, growth blossomed all around her. By the end of the year, her team was operating in a way she'd never experienced a team function before. The students loved being with them, and it really showed, because they didn't miss a single day of school the entire year. Suspensions went way down. Test scores, which were previously dead last in the district, shot up to the highest in state for those fifth grade students.
Oh my goodness.
And it's been over 5 years since Destiny experienced FULED, and now she's founding her own school called the Anchor School. And it's a school that won't have suspensions, a school that's going to train teachers to unpack their own identities, that's going to teach them to have the relationship skills to change lives, a school that's going to prioritize emotionally safe classrooms and social-emotional learning, not only for students, but for the adults. And so we see there that she grew her emotional intelligence, her relationship skills through FULED, but now she's growing the field, and we're really proud and excited to share her story.
That was amazing. And Laura, are you thinking what I'm thinking?
I'm thinking exactly what you're thinking.
Which is, we want Destiny on our
podcast. Yeah, I would love
to get with you guys, because that's such an inspirational story. And who does not have a Destiny in their school? I mean, who does?
Exactly.
And all of us have some of that within us. So, not to that. Guys, you have inspired us. We're excited about this program, Fuel Ed. Is there anything that we may not have asked you that you think it's important that you want that out there to our listeners that we may have not talked about?
You know, I don't know that we got a chance just to express our empathy and gratitude toward the educator workforce this year. I didn't ever mention that I'm married to a teacher. And so I've watched that from the sideline here, and obviously listen to teachers all the time in my work at FULED. And I kind of just want to mirror back to the collective that I see that it's been hard. I see that many of you don't feel seen and safe. I see that many of you are exhausted and don't know how to restore what's been lost. And I also see an incredible hope and commitment and devotion to children, to America's students. And I really admire that. So yeah, just a message of like, I'm listening. I want to listen. Like, call me if you want to tell me your story. I will listen to the teachers.
Makes me cry a little bit.
I know. I was getting choked up.
As an educator, it's like a balm, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean,
that's balm, B-A-L-M. Balm, B-O-M-B. Okay.
Yeah, accent. Sometimes she has to translate for me. But it is. It's like a healing balm. And even hearing that, it was like you were speaking to me.
Yeah.
And let me say, most of everybody is listening and not watching. But I have been watching you two as, and I just want to give you some affirmation on this. Your joy and your, it shows through, and your smiles, and you're really gifted in that. And both of you, just the twinkle in your eye, and it is palatable. It's just coming through. So I don't know if our listeners, but if you could see these two, I mean, it's just inspiring to watch you. And I don't even, that's probably something you're not even aware of that you do, but just your faces and your expressions, they're inspiring and they're hopeful and they're exciting and they're joyful, and it shows through. So I just, kudos to you too and the work you're doing. And I can see you're living it. It's in you. And thank you for what you're doing. And Laura, I'm sure, is going to attach all the good links so that folks can get more.
Wonderful. We'd love to connect with you all. We have free webinars happening all the time for educators. So check us out. And we hope to connect with you soon.
Absolutely.
Thank you, guys.
So good.
Thank you so much.
I love them.
Wow.
I know. That was like one of those unexpected, like, pleasant surprises. We didn't know what to expect.
It makes so much sense. It just makes so much sense. It's almost like, back it up and look at what we as teachers and educators, our background and what we're bringing before we can do all this other great and wonderful stuff. You know,
it's
so you do need to back up and look at the beginnings of the beginning.
Right. Because we do talk so much about, think about what's going on in the mind of the child. And can I say that I have not ever thought what's going on in the mind of the educator at that moment?
Well, and may I say that in light of the program that we just did in Tennessee, where it was about relationships, I mean, I don't want to brag on us because we did not have the knowledge that these two have, but what did we talk about? Relationships, 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 in relationship to trauma.
Yeah.
So it is that person, that person that makes the difference in another's lives. So all I'm saying is, Laura, I think we were ahead and did not know we were ahead. We just thought it made sense, and now we've got affirmation that, yes, it did make sense what we were saying.
And now we can say this is backed up by Fuel Ed.
Not just it, common sense, but we actually have research, right?
Yeah. Well, along the same lines as what we were talking about and what you just said about relationships, I have a story for you.
I love your stories.
Okay, there was a school. I'm looking to see if it tells where, but it doesn't say where. But it talks about how this person's high school graduation in their community, they just had their graduation. And so kids were about to remove their hats and throw them up. They were about to be pronounced graduates. But before they did that, the principal said, I want each of you to look in your diploma. There's a white envelope inside your diploma. And inside that envelope was a handwritten note from one of their teachers throughout the years. Mm. Each teacher had taken the time to make sure that every one of these 400 students had a personal note from a teacher who knew them. And so instead of that moment where they wanted to throw their hats and get out of there, she said there was silence across the football field as every kid forgot about their hats, forgot about their tassels, and instead tore into the envelopes to read these notes. She said it was silent, and then she added this. She said, "Teachers, if you think for one solitary second that these kids do not need you, please know that your job matters so much to so many." And I just think,
are you crying right now?
I'm getting emotional. Yes.
Okay. Yes. Just the mascara is on a little thick. I'm
just but she said, watching these almost grown up students tear into those envelopes is something she'll never forget. And so, you know, I think back to Laura Ross and something that she talks about how her school, and I'm mutilating this, and I'm sorry, Laura Ross, for mutilating this, but she talks about how every kid at the beginning of her year, I believe, they have a card, and the teachers go through and they put a mark. If they know that student, if they know something personal about that student, like that they play football or that they enjoy reading I Survived books or whatever, then they add a sticker to that child's card to make sure that at the end of that process, whichever child doesn't have any stickers on their card, they know that that is somebody that needs a connection with an adult throughout the year.
Wow.
Yes.
That is a rubber meets the road. And if you have an advisory system put in place where a child is known by another adult in the school besides the teacher, what a practical way of ensuring that child is known.
Yeah.
Wow. That is...
Isn't that great?
It is great, Laura. That is, it gave me chill bumps. And I want to piggyback on your story, if I may, because you can't outdo that story right there. But it made me think of when I was a high school counselor about 4 years ago.
And you did this. You handwrote 400 notes.
I did that. I'm doing it now. I'm writing the notes now. No, I had taught kindergarten for the group that was graduating. And so you think about these little 5 and 6 year olds, and now I am their high school counselor, right? And so they called me over, and it was a big group. And I've got a picture of this, of the group that I had in kindergarten. And that tells you how old I am, which I'm much older than that. But they all sang a song that we had learned in kindergarten. It was just this silly song that I would do with them, and they remembered it.
Aww.
And I just stood there and cried. And the things that we do as educators and teachers, and we may think it doesn't mean a lot, but gosh, it does mean a lot. It means so much to these students. And that when you say they're tearing into that, what that need, and just coming, this story's coming on the back of this podcast, that connection.
Yeah.
We're all making a connection, as we said, and what we did in Tennessee this past weekend, we were all making a connection, whether it be for good or for bad.
Yeah.
You are making an impact. So you choose if it's good or if it's bad.
Well, and I'd like to go back to something that Kelly was talking about, how the students came in, the 100% trauma students came in, and they were wallflowers. And I'd like to just bring something to your awareness, maybe, if I may.
You may.
We always joke around about how I want to blend in when we walk into a room, and you want all the attention on you. And I think that maybe you need to examine the trauma in my life, that maybe it's trauma.
I hear you.
Maybe it's trauma that makes me want to blend in, and I think you need to be a little bit more sensitive to me.
Going forward, I plan on doubling down.
Because exposure therapy is the best kind of therapy.
And I'm going to be that person when they say, "Do I have a volunteer?" And I'll be pointing up at you, because I'm always pointing up at you because you're taller than I am. So I'll be pointing like she wants to. And then, but you will have success, and then you'll become more resilient, and you're welcome.
But as she was talking, I was like, that's us. All right. We enjoyed that episode, and we will put all of the information in show notes. And just like every episode, we will let you know that you can join our Facebook group, Counselor Accents, where we share tips and tricks and just good conversation. And also check out where we'll be speaking on our calendar. We're all over the place, Kim. Are you ready? Do you have your bags packed?
Packed.
Okay. All right. Thank you for listening.